is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Fake all kinds of time, throws, hit as he throws, and that causes the interception. Jeremy Clark with the pick. Here's Silvers to pass. Over the middle, he's got a man wide open, Keenan Reynolds, and that's the way to answer. All the way to the house. The answer is 78-yard pick six with a 68-yard touchdown pass.
This aggressive defense got caught. Jerry Glanville talks about the safety cutting routes, jumping routes. This is what happens. Watch as the safety's going to come up, and that's what allows Reynolds, as the safety comes up right there, Silver sees him, and now Reynolds is going to be behind him deep, and he lays it out in front of him. Reynolds runs underneath it, and there's the fireworks that the faithful have wanted. Silvers finally gets it going. Reynolds finds the end zone, and the Dragons have some life.
Silvers zips that one, caught by Keenan Reynolds, and they get it. This is the ball game. Cornelius towards the end zone, intercepted, game over. Kyle Caro finishes it off.
Don't you know, pump it up, the city are going up, and Spurs are bringing joy to the masses by having last-minute limbs in Aston in Birmingham. But also, the Pedestrian Podcast is back once again with myself, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm very well. It seems like a long time since we spoke, but looking forward to getting back to it.
Yeah, obviously, it's been about a month or so since last time. In that time, we have news, the Super Bowl champs. But also, the XFL is back. Vinnie Mac has tried again, and through 2 weeks, it seems to be working to talk. Help us talk through the Seattle side of it. The Seattle Dragons is their sideline report and the producer over on 710 ESPN. Maura Dooley, how are we?
I'm awesome. How are you guys?
Not too bad.
Yeah, it's going really well. And you must be really excited about how the league started off because, you know, a new league is always kind of trepidation whether it's going to work or not. But it seems so far like it's been a bit of a roaring success.
Yeah, we were, you know, a little anxious to get it underway and see how everything was going to go because, you know, they did a training camp in Houston with all of the teams. And they did get to, the Seattle Dragons did get to face off against the DC Defenders down there before they played them week one. But both coaches admitted that they didn't really want to show each other anything. So you just really didn't even know. We're all wondering, like, is this team any good? You know, we had no idea before week one. So just to see it all come to fruition and see how into it the fans are and some of the cool elements they've added to the broadcast, I think this could be really successful.
Yeah, so all 10 teams were practicing together but apart. Is that what happened down there?
Yeah, so eight. There's eight of them. They all went to Houston for a few weeks and got to kind of face each other and see what the competition was. And then it was kind of a cool setup because that also allowed teams to see what other teams might have that they might need. And there were some trades that happened after that. I think they really thought through the process and like the rules that they came up with work really well. I thought that joint training camp with everyone in Houston was a good idea. And the Seattle team, man, the defense looked really good the other day. I'm really excited for them.
And also, it's pretty cool that the Seattle team has the guy who was the first quarterback of the the NFL team, and now he's the coach and GM of the newest Gridiron team. That's a pretty cool like symmetry to that, isn't there?
Yeah, Jim Zorn, he's brought that up. You know, he said that when he started with the Seahawks, it was a brand new thing too, and they kind of got to see that come to fruition. And right now he's told his team that they need to earn, you know, they were lucky that a lot of fans showed up on Saturday to support them, but that it's something that they need to earn, and they need to prove to this fan base that they're here to stay and they're going to grow.
I mean, we're watching, because all the games are broadcast over here on one of our sports channels. I messaged Adam just saying how like Jim Zorn appears to be the nicest man in the world. Is he the same as he is on the sidelines, like when you're talking to him after practices and things?
Yeah, he's pretty a nice guy. Like it's so cool now that with this broadcast you can hear him calling his plays and stuff. And we were all laughing the first week because even when he got frustrated, he would just say, "Darn it." Or, you know, come on, men, we need to do better. And then he's like, oh, that's okay. It's definitely not. But, you know, it's kind of, I guess we're kind of used to that with Pete Carroll here, too. Just it's a very positive vibes from the coaches here in Seattle.
It's funny that you mention that we can hear the, you know, what he's saying, because for me, that's been one of the great innovations. And, you know, Vince McMahon isn't going to put his time and effort into something that he would call a developmental league. But in a way, everyone's watching this thinking, you know, what could they put into the NFL? And I have to say, every innovation that I can think of so far, I've absolutely loved. And I kind of feel like the NFL is going to be pushed into a position where they almost aren't going to be able to ignore some of the stuff that's going on. Because I watched the game on Saturday and I couldn't give a damn, to be honest, initially. But I really got into it because there were just so many good little wrinkles that made me enjoy it probably more than I enjoy watching even the college game, to be honest.
You know, I'm totally with you on that. I've tried over the years to become more of a college fan, but I just never grew up with a specific team to root for. And I went to a smaller college, so I don't really have one. And it's just, I agree. I think that this is easier for me to get invested in. And I've been surprised even when I'm not, you know, at the Dragons games, I've been watching some of the other games and you know, it's just interesting to get this in-game reaction, even when they do something bad. And it's a little cringeworthy. Almost at times you feel bad for the guy when he misses a field goal and he's got a microphone in his face, but it is interesting too. And I absolutely love the transparency they're having with the referees, mm-hmm. and you getting to see them work through the process. And they don't have challenges like the NFL does. They just have that one person that can override things and stop the game if they need to. And I think it's been much more efficient. And I think that the fans appreciate being able to see the process.
Yeah. And even with, I don't know, with the play clock, I felt like I was watching so much more football than I do even in an NFL game. I think I mean, there were so many big plays in the third quarter that happened on Saturday, and there were still like 5 minutes of the third quarter to go, and I felt like I'd watched a whole half of football. It was great.
Yeah, it's. I think that 25-second play clock was great. They did a lot of research. When I talked to Oliver Luck, the commissioner, they did a lot of polling fans and asking what they wanted, and I think, like you said, that's something that the NFL could take note of. You know, they are popular and making a lot of money right now. So sometimes I think they don't care much to ask the fans what they want. They just kind of do whatever they feel is best. But I think that we're going to see the XFL be successful because they really did reach out and decide, and, you know, find out what the fans wanted, but also find out how they could implement that in a way that would actually work. And you see that with the kickoff as well. Mm-hmm. They have some innovative rules there because, you know, I think the NFL is getting to the point where they're slowly just hoping to maybe do away with the kickoff because they're so concerned about safety. And it seems like the XFL has come up with a way to still have that kickoff in the game, but they're not running full force at each other from across the field. They're lining up closer, and that still allows the possibility for the kick returner to have an electric play and maybe take it all the way back.
Yeah, I think I've tweeted a few times last couple of weeks, Vince McMahon doesn't make the same mistake twice. So when it all come through, like, this was coming back around again, the wrestling fan in me had a fair idea that it would be a success because the guy is just, he's a trailblazer, he's an innovator, like few other people in any walk of life, really. You talked about that there wasn't much to go off if this team were going to be good. Is that... the players, if it was going to work, the on-field product, are the players surprised with how well it's gone through 2 weeks and how like the the pretty much universal good feeling, goodwill that the league has through 2 weeks?
Yeah. I think they're definitely not, you know, surprised with how they're doing. Everybody that I talked to on the team said they've left Houston feeling pretty confident that they would do well, but they knew there would be some growing pains with the newness and the new rules and just getting everyone together. But as far as the reception that they've had, I think that's where they maybe were a little nervous, just how people would perceive this new league and what the following would be like. And it's really exceeded everyone's expectations, I think. And Seattle especially, I believe that the highest attendance numbers anywhere else were about 18,000 week one and week two. And Seattle's home opener had over 29,000 fans.
Is there potentially the risk of, you know, obviously we're in a bit of a Seattle bubble. I mean, we're miles away, but kind of feel like we're in that bubble. But I mean, to pull back the curtain, my wife likes sport about as much as she likes long traffic jams. And on Saturday night, we just finished watching a film and I knew the game was on. So I just slowly did that kind of remote grab where you're trying to hope that she's playing a game on her phone or something, so she's not taking notice. And, when I put on an American football game, she kind of sat up like a dog seeing a squirrel in the distance and declared, what is this? The Super Bowl's happened. What is this fake leak? And, you know, not to you know, cast any aspersions on what you guys do, because I know it's not a fake leak. But to people like that and, you know, from families that may be suffering like football fatigue and maybe outside of Seattle where, you know, maybe the attendance is slightly less, is that maybe the main concern that there's like a saturation point that you can hit? And what's been done to mitigate that?
Yeah, I think there maybe is a little concern about whether it's going to taper off a little bit. But I think there's a little bit of a concern. People keep saying that you need a little bit more name recognition. You need a few more guys in there that people know a little better, even though there are plenty of guys that floated around the NFL. But I think as far as, you know, maybe interest tapering off, the fact that they made it such a short season should help. It's only 10 games. I mean, it's going to be over before we know it. And so I think that that's going to help. Obviously winning, I think, is going to help. If the Seattle team can, you know, keep playing well, which I think that they can, that I think will definitely keep fans coming out. You know how faithful the Seattle fans are. But I think there still is a little bit of unknown there, because I know that when they tried the AAF, there was a bit of a drop off from the first couple weeks in viewership. But I really think that this is being done a lot better.
Yeah, the whole approach seems to be seems to be way more self aware than the AAF, and that seems to be benefit. There are a few familiar names to Seahawks fans on the Dragons roster, obviously Kaysen Williams, BJ Daniels, Keenan Reynolds as well, who had the long touchdown at the weekend. What role did they play? Obviously, getting the other players who hadn't played in Seattle in Central Link before Saturday. Do you think? I mean, they were probably still surprised at the noise, really, more than anything on Sunday. But what role did they play in prepping the new people to that environment in Seattle before the weekend?
Yeah, and I think, and that's another probably good point that kind of feeds into the last question you asked too, is that I think the league did a good job of making sure that each team got some local names that fans there of NFL would recognize. So I think that helps interest a bit too. Everyone out here has been really excited to see Kaysen Williams get started. He's dealing with a quad injury, but I believe he should be back very soon, hopefully this week. I talked to Kaysen Williams and Keenan Reynolds about that, just kind of like, have you prepared these guys for what CenturyLink Field is like? Because I know it won't be as full as a Seahawks game, but still, it was loud in there on Saturday. I could see the Vipers players holding onto their helmets trying to hear the call. And a bunch of the defensive players told me that that helped them on third down immensely. And then I talked to Keenan Reynolds in game, another one of those cool things we're allowed to do. I just got to interview him right after a touchdown. And he said, these are the best fans in the world, period. Like, he just thinks hands down that Seattle, and he, you know, he's played elsewhere, has the best fans, and it's a huge advantage for them. But it was cool getting to see some of the guys, like you said, that haven't experienced that Keenan and Kaysen kind of tried to tell them. But Kyle Cairo, who caught the game-sealing interception, told me that it kind of legitimized the whole thing for him. He said that when he heard that level of noise from the fans, he realized, like he said, this isn't Bush League. This isn't minor league. Like, I'm playing real football.
Yeah, I mean, we're used to seeing guys in numbers 50s upwards jerseys making enormous plays on defense. And that interception touchdown by Fraser, I think it was, I jumped off the sofa. And I wasn't really emotionally invested in it, maybe until that moment. And I actually texted Stu at the time saying, like, that's the play that's probably going to be the hook for the team to get people. Like, you'd go back. If you were at that game, I feel like you'd go back because that play was so cool. Did anyone talk about that as, like, perhaps a seminal moment in what could be going forward for a franchise? Because it really felt like that for me, and I'm 6,000 miles away.
Yeah, no, I think so. And it was really cool in the stadium because everyone, the entire team, offense and everyone, just rushed to that end of the end zone. And then the players went over to the stands and the fans were going crazy. I know Jim Zorn was kind of making fun of Marcel Fraser after the game, saying that he heard him holding court for the media in the locker room, talking about how the ball was going in slow motion. But he said, he should live it up. Defensive ends don't really get that opportunity very often. But it was, yeah, I mean, I heard a few guys on the defense say they thought that might end up being the play of the year. It was just very athletic and good heads-up play. And also in that very same end zone, KJ Wright and Cam Chancellor from the Seahawks were sitting in a suite and watching, and they were cheering them on. So it was a really cool moment for them.
Is Saturday why one reason why the XFL wanted to put a team in Seattle, do you think that the whole atmosphere, that moment, kind of as we said before, it kind of validated everything, isn't it? That's probably why they were so keen on putting a team this time around in Seattle, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that the fans here have shown that they can be really dedicated and really supportive. And, you know, we saw it even just with the hockey team that they're working on launching here. When they opened up their ticket sales, they sold out like the first day. They doubled or tripled what Las Vegas had done when they got their expansion franchise. And I think still at the end of the day, this is a football town more than anything. So I think that they already knew they had a built-in fan base here. And also, you know, Seattle is a very expensive city. And we have, you know, a lot of big corporations here. And sometimes Seahawks games are not the most affordable or easy to get to
for
everyone.
Yep.
And yeah, and this is so, you know, this is something that's I saw people tweeting, you know, I could take my entire family and afford to go, and that's not something I can do with an NFL game here. So it's really nice for people that way as well.
So it's a 10-week regular season. How does the playoffs work if it comes to that for the Dragons?
The playoffs towards the end of April, it's just since it's eight teams, it's the East and the West is how it's split up. So the two best teams in the East and the two best teams in the West will play each other. And then the winner of that game plays for the championship, or the winner of those games moves on.
Cool. Has there been any, well, obviously it's only 2 weeks, but has there been any clarification on how the situation would be for players who, if they would like sign in for the NFL teams or making that move, or are they longer term commitments with the Dragons and the XFL? Is there any word on
That's
how
a good
that
question.
Works?
I haven't heard specifics. I know they've said that they're supportive of players. They understand that's the goal for a lot of guys. But I think with the way the season works out that, you know, the player should be able to finish that season in April and still do what they need to do for the NFL. I wouldn't think that it would interfere there, but that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it's a good question for me to ask here soon. I haven't gotten a definitive answer on that.
If there was a worry, and this is really nitpicking because there's about 15 guys on the planet that are particularly good at being quarterbacks, even at the NFL level, the standard of quarterbacking has not been great. And obviously that is the driving force for, you know, a lot of offense. I mean, there was one point where I thought Brock Heward was so far in the huddle, I thought it was going to go under center because he was just getting annoyed by what he was seeing. But is that something that, like, if there was going to be a problem with the offensive and you're putting points on the board, is that something that has been a concern? I mean, obviously it was a nice 67-yard touchdown or whatever, but it's probably been the weakest point of it, unless that's unfair to say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have heard people say that if this league's going to keep interest, you know, the NFL's gone pretty far out of their way to make it more of an offensive league, that, you know, the quarterback play is going to have to be better. And, but I will say, man, I watched a little bit of the Houston Roughnecks game yesterday, and PJ Walker is really fun to watch. He was doing some crazy Patrick Mahomes style passes, but I think there does need to be a little bit of an elevation in the quarterback play overall. I know I work with Dave Wyman here at 710 ESPN and on our afternoon show, and he played, you know, for the Seahawks years ago, and he thinks that the quarterback play will come along, just with this being a new league. He seemed to think that that's just a position that's going to take a little bit more time. But also, I don't know, I'm no coach, but I would love to see the Dragons use BJ Daniels a little bit mixed in with Brandon Silvers, just because they're both very different. I think Brandon's a little bit more of a pure pocket passer, and BJ is fast and can scramble. You saw a little bit of that at the end of the Defenders game when Brandon went out for a couple plays. And so I think that would honestly be really fun to see. I don't know how viable it is for them. They split reps fairly evenly at practice.
So obviously week three, they have another home game, isn't it, this weekend for the Dragons?
Yes. Yeah, they're back at home against the Dallas Renegades.
Is there like a, I can't think of the words, but is there a powerhouse emerging in the league, do you think, or 2 weeks, or is it still too early for that on the Western side?
Well,
does Seattle stand 1-1, Roughnecks to win both their games, as you say?
Yeah, it's hard to tell this early, but I was we were actually kind of encouraged this week by the fact that the Defenders looked so good against the Guardians, because, you know, the Dragons lost to them last week, but they were in it and, you know, kind of made some dumb mistakes and the Defenders pulled away, but the Guardians had won the week before and the Defenders shut them out completely. So they look like they're a pretty good team, and Cardale Jones is, you know, playing like one of the better quarterbacks in the league so far. So, but yeah, other than that, and then Houston, I would say Houston. So, you know, you made that point. It's probably the two teams that's quarterbacks have been playing the best the first couple of weeks. And
yeah,
they have good defenses as well.
One of my friends who's a New York Giants fan has obviously took affinity with the Guardians, said it was all very familiar and very warm, a warm feeling when he watched the New York team put 0 points up on the board on the weekend. So, I think an explosion of points, but I think certain fans in New York and New Jersey have got used to zero bagels on the scoreboard. As well as the sorry reporting for the XFL, I think Adam could have done me your help this week, because the fantasy football, you opine and seem pretty proficient on that. Is that the next step for the XFL, that fantasy football infiltrates this league as well?
Yeah, I definitely think that they want to move that direction. I think there might already be some people doing it on the daily fantasy sites, but I don't play those. I usually do, you know, more of the ESPN, Yahoo kind of fantasy football. And I know that they do want to get involved with that probably maybe next season. I think there's some things that, you know, just needed to come together this year before they wanted to complicate things too much. But, and of course, that would be another way to get fans more invested moving forward as well.
Yeah, I mean, another part of the broadcast is that the betting lines and the over-under is on the screen every single second of the game, which is weirdly encouraging compared to what the NFL were doing a couple of years ago, finding Tony Romo for hosting fantasy football things, isn't it? So that's another aspect which is a refreshing change, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, but how does Vegas get it right? They got all of there hadn't been a game played, and the first week they got everything right. I mean, there's some sorcery going on there.
It's so weird. I don't get that either. People were asking us about, like, oh, the Dragons have the worst odds in the league, and we're like, how?
Yeah. Unless Vince is scripting it like the WWE, then I don't understand how it's going like that otherwise.
You know, I've been traveling with these guys and everything. I'm pretty sure, no. I think they were genuinely disappointed week one and extremely happy yesterday.
What's the atmosphere like? I mean, is the end goal for all of them, you know, playing Sundays in September, October, November, as I can probably imagine, more just an appreciation that for a lot of these guys, it's another chance to strap the pads on and hit each other in the head?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of both. I've talked to a few guys that, you know, the main goal, Kaysen Williams has made it clear that he is trying to get back to the NFL. And there's definitely some guys that are in that boat. But I think there's also some guys that, you know, just love playing football. And they've told me they love the camaraderie of it. They love just playing for fans. And, you know, their whole slogan for the XFL is for the love of football. And I've asked quite a few guys about their stories, why they love football. And, you know, it's, and I think it's another thing that makes the league endearing too, because the quarterbacks make a decent amount, but a lot of these guys, they're not making a ton of money to be doing this. And so the guys that, you know, maybe aren't playing for a shot to get back in the NFL, they're really just doing it, you know, and being away from their families and, you know, whatever regular job they were working before this. John Santiago for the Dragons was a teacher. His whole classroom tweeted out a video cheering him on. And, you know, they're just taking time to, because they want to play more football because they love it.
Yeah, give us some texture to the Dragons team. Are there any other kind of stories you can think of that can kind of add some personality to the helmet and the number?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a ton. If you go to the XFL Seattle website, or one of our social media guys, Mason Kelly, has been doing a really great job of telling some of those stories. But I know, so the kicker that they just picked up before the season, Ernesto Lacayo, he was living in a VW van outside of a like gym, working with John Carney, who was a kicker in the NFL for years. Just
was it Gardner Minshew's van?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, fair.
He's been touring that around America. I think he's got more of an RV situation.
Oh, okay. So this guy was living in
a little bigger.
Okay.
Yeah. but yeah, just hoping to get that shot, training with a, you know, former NFL kicker, and he got the call for the XFL and got that chance, and he's been really happy to be here. Yeah, and as I said, John Santiago was a teacher. Who else have I talked to? You know, and then, you know, Keenan Reynolds, he's still doing some of his, he has military commitment still because he was a quarterback at Navy. So he has worked out agreements with them where normally when you're in the reserve, you have, you know, certain weekends for like a month that you have to report, and he has to do it all in chunks. They let him play the football season, but then he'll have to report for like 30 days straight and still, you know, take care of his military obligations.
That's mad. Is it the same for the coaches, do you think, or is that, obviously Jim Zorn's had his run and was in the NFL for years, but for his assistants, is it the same, put stuff on a film for the NFL coaches watching? Is that the same for the coaches as it is for the players, do you think?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, I think there's a lot of coaches that are hoping to use this as a resume builder and, you know, possibly get back into the NFL as well. So it's a pretty cool kind of way to,
yeah.
We were talking about it being a little bit in between, you know, college and the NFL. It's kind of just another avenue for people to take, and you kind of get to see people hopefully work their way into their dream.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. There'll be more affinity for the players or coaches that make that leap as well, wouldn't there? Obviously, there's not just names, there's some background to them if you spend the next 10 weeks watching them play in the XFL, wouldn't there?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where coaching in the NFL, we hear about it a lot. There's, you know, there's only so many jobs, and for some reason the same names get recycled over and over. You get fired from one place and hired to another, and I think just a lot of times it's hard for guys to get that opportunity. You know, Clayton Lopez, the defensive coordinator for the Dragons, he has bounced around with a lot of teams. He was even an assistant at one point with the Seahawks, and just hasn't gotten that shot. But from what I've seen so far, he's a phenomenal coach and has done really well with this defense for, you know, this last week. They didn't know which quarterback was going to play. There were three options they had to prepare for. And they ended up going with Taylor Cornelius, which was the one that no one really thought was going to get the start. So, and the way that defense played, he did an amazing job.
So how many of those orange towels have you got? Because I know it's a bit Pittsburgh-y, but that was great. I loved looking at that, like with a touchdown screen, everyone waving like they were losing their minds. That was very cool. And a few of them must have been flung kind of in your vague direction during the celebrations.
Yeah, they were handing those out to the fans as they came in. And that was definitely something that looked really cool as everyone was getting hyped up. I was also very impressed with the level of creativity of, there was actually quite a few sections of fans, like five in a row, just all wearing like dragon onesies that they ordered
yeah.
online. And there was even some people with like dragon masks. And yeah, they really came prepared for the home opener.
Seattle, man. It's a different. Adam, anything else?
No, I think we could probably do a bit of Seahawks stuff, if that's okay with you.
7-10 covering the team as you do. Is there anyone that you've enjoyed like interviewing and working alongside over the last few years on the team? Obviously, it's a team full and chock full of personalities, even if the personalities are slightly different to the ones who were there a few years ago. Is there anyone that you enjoy working with and having on the radio?
Oh, yes. I think I work on Bob Dave and Moore now. I was producing John Clayton's show. But I think the one that everyone gets excited when they tell us that we're going to interview is DJ Fluker, the offensive lineman. He just has the biggest personality. He's always smiling. And he's just a giant human. Like, you would think when you just see him that he's going to be intimidating and mean.
Yeah.
He's just this giant, scary-looking guy on the field. But he's just the happiest guy you could ever meet. And he's constantly got these one-liners, like, when he's talking about facing Damon Snack Harrison in the game, saying that they're like two bears fighting in the woods. when he squared off against Ndamukong Suh, he said that he was taking him to the water all day. He has all these great terms. And yeah, so he is definitely a favorite. But there's a lot. We really enjoy Trey Flowers a lot, too. He's a little more quiet, but just he's just a really good guy to talk to. Oh, the Griffin brothers. Are always fun. I'm trying to think on offense. Tyler Lockett is great. Chris Carson's kind of quiet. Mm-hmm. I like talking to him, but he just likes to do his thing on the field, and I don't think he loves talking to the media.
Yeah, on Fluka, when I went to the Ravens game last season, we were able to get field passes, and I think for the first 5 minutes in a non-weird way, we just stood looking at DJ Fluka, because I mean, he was 34 he was about 30-40 yards away, but he was big enough to be right in front of you. Everything is just too big, it feels like. It's the biggest human being I've ever been in the same building as Adam.
Yeah, I can quite imagine.
Yeah.
have you had a chance?
We were talking to him about finding clothes and shoes, and he said that that big people are the forgotten people. It's very hard. I guess he's had a hard time since, I think he said his feet were huge since he was like a teenager. He wears something crazy like size 22 shoes or something.
Oh my! He must just take fabric to shops and tell them to make something out of it.
Like in Vietnam.
You mentioned the Griffin brothers there. Have you had a chance to speak to them about the Griffin sack, which for me was the moment of the season, apart from Lynch's touchdown against San Francisco, I think. I mean, I told Stu, and we did our end of season wrap podcast, I think I had tears in my eyes when that happened. I just found it the most emotionally charging moment that I've seen for a long time. Have you had a chance to speak to them about that since the season finished?
You know, I haven't. When the season wrapped, unfortunately, we didn't have, you know, quite the same access because we're usually out there every week. But I did hear an interview where he spoke about it, and just Shaquille Griffin said how special that was for them, and they would remember that moment forever. And yeah, it's just I don't know. They're another pair that are just like DJ Fluker. They're just happy all the time, and having those two on the team, I think, is a great morale booster for everyone. And just Shaquille's story, I think, is so inspiring to everyone that he was able to work his way into the NFL, and then to be on the same team as your brother and then get that moment in the playoffs. Yeah, it gave me chills too.
it was really cool. But like just watching them over the first two years of Shaquille's career must be pretty cool, because obviously, especially with how Shaquille played for most of 2019, and now Shaquille come through, it must be a cool relationship to watch in that locker room, which is usually, it's been accused of being in the past a bit niggly and stuff. It must be pretty cool to watch two people just champion each other to the hilt, as they clearly do.
Yeah, they have they're definitely known for being the ones that show up on game day, and they're just decked out. They love their designer clothes. And they do the little, like, almost runway show walking through the tunnel. I think Shaquille was slowly starting at the end of last season to get out there more and be a little bit more involved in the pass rush. And I'm hoping that can work out for him, because I think that he is talented enough for them to get him out there more and not just have him on special teams. But, you know, I think it was hard this year with Jadeveon Clowney being hurt and Ziggy Ansah not really being what they hoped. So they were trying to get the entire pass rush going, and it was hard. It's hard to figure out where he fits. I think if they get that straightened out, they could rotate him in and really carve out a role for him.
Yeah, and then all the money they get, hopefully, going to be given to Mr. Clowney as well, isn't there? Which will go towards that.
Yes, I mean, I think that's what everyone's hoping. Everyone thinks it's positive that he said he wants to play for a contender and he doesn't just want to go somewhere for money. But we'll see. Obviously, he still was a huge difference maker, even with the core injury that he was struggling through. But it would be great to see what he could do if he was fully healthy for a season next year.
Now, in much more significant news, people often are known to like dress like their heroes and style their hair like their heroes. So are there a lot of 1970s porn stars perms around on kids down the streets in Seattle to follow Russell Wilson after his performance at the awards a couple of weeks ago?
What was that? So someone pulled that up. I was on the plane ride home from DC for the XFL game, and I thought it was fake. I was like, that's not real, is it?
I genuinely did the spit your water out thing when I saw it. Like, no joke.
There's a soccer player, there's two. They're both Italian. Gennaro Gattuso and Andrea Pirlo. That's who he looks like. Like early 2000s soccer players.
Yeah, from Italy.
not the quarterback of the team in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, that was weird. I have to say, I'm not sure what he was going for there. I guess he is, you know, he is willing to take some fashion risks. He's done some weird stuff.
And
I think Sierra has stepped up his edginess because that's not how he was at the beginning of his career.
No. So you've not seen it be all the rage haircut in Seattle for the last fortnight then, though?
No, I don't think that's going to catch on.
I can't understand why. I just can't understand why.
So we've had Mike Dugar, who covers the team for the Athletic on, and he's quite vocal in his distaste
for... I'm in a fantasy football league with him.
Okay. Is he? He's not much of a fan. We'll get into that. He's not much of a fan of techno music or Techno Thursday, but seems to be a fan of Luke Wilson. Where do you stand on Luke and techno music and Techno Thursday and short shorts?
I am not a fan of techno music either, but Techno Thursday is fun.
Agreed. That is the correct take.
Yeah.
The music is bad. The ethos is good.
Yes. Just watching them, you know, dance around like fools and wear short shorts and everything. It's very fun. He and Jordan Roos, one of the backup offensive linemen, have a funny relationship. They're always teasing each other, Luke and him. And Jordan Roos is, just huge and tattooed. And he's always wearing cutoff shirts. So seeing him in the short shorts is always interesting.
I mean, Jordan Roos is... Oh, his Instagram is Creature Man. Is that moniker around VMAC as well, is it?
Yeah, Luke nicknamed him that, I guess. We talked to Jordan Roos on the show this year, and I guess he did it pretty much initially on when he met him. He was like, what are you? You look like some kind of creature. So I guess that's how that came about. And I was like, but you guys became friends after that? He said, yeah.
I feel like Luke Wilson should be signed just to do like the second version of the Real Mike Rob Report, because I think he would just do a brilliant job of that.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking about this actually on the show I produce, and it's kind of hard because we were going through all the free agents and whether you keep them or let them go. And it's just like, oh, Luke Wilson's such a fan favorite, and he's just so fun. I can't believe I didn't mention his name earlier when we were talking about who's fun, but... and I think it's good for the team in a way, but at the same time, I'm not sure production-wise that they need to keep him around next year. That was kind of the consensus that we came to in the free agency talk, and it made everyone sad, but not so sure he's still going to be around.
I mean, he was down at the Super Bowl with TSM, wasn't he? So he's clearly got his eyes on what comes next already.
Yeah. And I had gone the last couple of years with John Clayton's show, and he was there then too. So yeah, I think once his football career is over, he's got things lined up for sure.
I mean, yeah, he's gonna be like the Canadian Pat McAfee. He's got the potential to be, isn't he?
Oh yeah, I could see that definitely.
Yeah,
Yeah, he screams XFL, actually.
So we just mentioned. So is Mike Dugar as good at fantasy football as he would probably try and tell me and Adam that he is?
His team was pretty good this year, but I won the entire league, so he can't say that he was as good as me.
Oh, I'm gonna have to store that for some knowledge. You really did very well to kind of, you know, prepare us for the humble brag that you won the league. So fair play to you for that. It doesn't sound like Mike actually made the playoffs at all from your tone, but you don't have to be nice on here. We're not asking for nothing.
I would actually have to go back and look. I can't remember. I think he did make the playoffs, but he didn't make the. I rode Ryan Tannehill all the way to the playoffs, which was hilarious because that's not something I would have pictured happening. But I think I had Tom Brady in for a little while, and then I have a couple leagues, so I'm trying to remember. But yeah, just towards the end of the year, he ended up being the better. Oh no, it was Dak Prescott. I had Dak for a lot of the year, mm-hmm. and then Ryan Tannehill, like the last month of the season, was a gem. Who would have thought?
my season was going fine until I faced Lamar Jackson in the championship round, and that did not go well. Oh. So obviously, all the fantasy football thing is available up over on Sports Brunch. How did that come about and get started?
You know, it's just a small thing I decided to do just because I love fantasy football, and you know, we don't really cover it here at my work at 710 yeah. Sports, so I just wanted to kind of start doing some random videos with a friend that I've played in a league with, and just see if anybody paid attention. A couple people, you know, we got some questions, some advice throughout the season, so it was just kind of testing it out to see if there was any interest, but I had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, it was quite prophetic with a few of things I saw. And as I said, Adam, you should definitely follow it for 2020, I think.
Yeah, sounds like I'm going to need that as at least a starting point, to be honest.
Well, I won my work league, too. So at least I can say that, like, I'm doing all right. If you, okay. You probably take my advice.
I'm hitching the cart to your wagon. Yeah, I'm just going to roll with what you say to do.
You know, I had Christian McCaffrey in both leagues, though, so that, you know, drafting well at the beginning is very important.
I think you missed our draft, didn't you, Adam?
Yeah, I think I was catering that evening, so the auto draft absolutely slaughtered me, as it always does. one of those unfortunate situations. But hey, there's nothing more boring than people hearing about how bad my fantasy team was, as opposed to how good your guys was. So what are your hopes for, you know, presumably the spirits must be fairly high in Seattle going into next season, thinking that, you know, it could be time again for a push.
Yeah, I think so. It was actually really, really impressive to me with all of the injuries they had, you know, on top of Jadeveon Clowney. They also basically had, you know, just a really banged up offensive line at almost every position out there in that game against the Packers. You're missing your top two running backs. And I think Travis Homer is going to be good, but it was just a hard situation to throw him in there behind a banged up offensive line. I was impressed with what they were able to do, and honestly, they should have won that Packers game, I felt. you know, that whole starting slow and then coming on to the second half thing finally bit them. But I couldn't be more impressed with what they were able to pull off, overcoming all those injuries and making it as far as they did. And the way they matched up against the San Francisco 49ers in particular, I think, is really encouraging, because obviously it seems like they're probably going to be the team that you're going to be competing with the next couple of years. And, you know, the biggest thing they need to do is fix the pass rush. I don't think, you know, Dave Wyman keeps saying on our show that he doesn't think there's been a more glaring, obvious need in the off season in a long time. Like, usually you kind of maybe argue over what areas they need to work on, but I think that's the one area that everyone wants them to focus on. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they don't really need to add on offense, in my opinion. I mean, if you get another receiver or tight end, that's great. They do have to kind of try to keep this offensive line together, so they may have to plug in some pieces there. But as long as they do some work on, you know, the defensive line, I think Trey Flowers is going to bounce back. People have been kind of down on him because his worst games were at the end of the season, so it's fresh in everyone's mind. But, you know, Shaquille Griffin had a little bit of that sophomore slump too, and Trey's even coming from college playing safety and converting to corner. So he'll get there, and I think he's going to be fine. So really, yeah, I don't think this team is going to lose a whole lot. I think they just need to add some pieces on defense and should be good to go.
Yeah, so the Seattle sports fans will have 10 weeks of fun and enjoyment and goodwill with the Dragons. The Seahawks will pay all of the money to Javon Clowney. Then the Mariners will stroll into town and put everyone in a bad mood for 6 months. As well as it's going in Centurion Field, it's a different story in for the near future across the street, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I'm not gonna lie, it's a bit of a hard sell for us right now on sports radio to try to get people to stay interested. They're a little frustrated, you know, with how long they've been waiting for the Mariners to get this right. But I do think they did a lot of work on their farm system last year.
Yeah.
Some of these young guys they have are really fun to watch. Kyle Lewis got off to an amazing start last year, just hitting home runs left and right. It's one of those where if you love baseball, I think it's still going to be a fun season, but I understand the Mariner fan frustrations because, you know, I grew up a Red Sox fan. My dad's from Boston and they always would break your heart, but they would break your heart like in the playoffs. The Mariners are frustrated because they don't even get to the playoffs, the fans. So, I mean, that's a little harder, I guess.
There's like over and under on points in the XFL. It's over and under on how deep into June people will stop watching games, I think, with the Mariners, isn't it?
Yeah.
Also, one more thing at T-Mobile Park. Have they put any silencers on trash can lids over the off-season, do you think? Or?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be really interesting to see. I think the Astros are definitely going to be getting a lot of heckling and people dressed as trash cans and pretty much everything that you can do when they come to town.
Yeah. I mean,
that's just been mishandled so badly.
But I think Vegas were offering... again, over-unders on how many times the Alex Bregman and Altuve are going to be beamed this year, which kind of suggests that it's going to be uncomfortable. Talking of things being handled badly, Adam, should you have a quick spin in the bin?
Stuart, that is a magnificent segue. I'm so proud of you. 3.5 years and you're a real podcast host. I'm so impressed.
First of all, this is an exciting time. For our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
The 2020 offseason and GITB is back. Adam, do you want to start us off?
Sure, just so we can kind of give our guest a rough idea on how this works. It must be a confusing thing to introduce to people. So I'm going to put the Chargers in the bin. I mean, they're probably so irrelevant now that most people don't even know they still exist, but they do. And Philip Rivers left them and he left with a tweet. And I just think that's so bad. The guy has given everything to that team. There were comparisons with the way the Giants, you know, let Eli go, which is slightly I'm not okay with, because they did bench Eli for Geno Smith at one point, which is about as disrespectful a thing as you could ever do to a human being. But the way in which the Chargers have let Rivers go, just with a tweet and not much of a ceremony for what the guy did, I just think was piss poor, to be honest.
Yeah, but it would be more of a news story or surprise if it was the first example of the Chargers being slightly skew-if at the top table, wouldn't it? Obviously, they left San Diego under a bit of a dark cloud, and every move they make kind of seems to be a bit questionable on merit and morals, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, they pretty much lost their entire fan base in that move, and just managed to alienate them and make them very angry. And then this move is, it seems like he was owed a little bit more too. I mean, Philip Rivers has been with that team since, I mean, Eli Manning's retiring and they got drafted the same year. That whole thing went down where Eli didn't want to play there. And that's a really long time to just kind of, I agree with you, put out a tweet and say thank you for everything.
They have fewer fans than the Dragons now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably not even a joke. The Chargers need to move to London. I hate to say
Would you want them?
I mean, we've been through this a lot. I mean, we wouldn't change our team. Obviously, the Seahawks would be our number one team forever. I mean, I live in London, so I probably would go and watch them as a second team. But I mean, what are the Chargers offering the NFL anymore? They're a complete nothing.
Then you have the weird holdout with your running back Melvin Gordon, and yeah, it's been a bit of a mess.
I mean, because the LA XFL team play in Carson's one, and then it was weird because, as someone said, there's actually home fans at a LA game in that stadium, which it hasn't been for the last couple of years.
I saw that too. Yeah, they said more people showed up for them. Even Todd Gurley was there.
Maura, anyone for the bin for you?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Matt McGloin, the New York Guardians quarterback.
Nice.
One thing that we're seeing in the XFL with these in-game interviews is that you might get some stuff that you wouldn't hear ever in the NFL, because Diana Russini went up and asked him at halftime what was going on when they were losing, you know, getting shut out. And he said, we need to throw the whole entire game plan out the window at halftime, and said there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors that we need to clean up, communication. I mean, he basically just threw the entire coaching staff and team under the bus.
I think
and
his
he was
coach
not playing well himself.
The coach gave him some shit back afterwards, didn't he? Just after halftime, in his kind of post halftime report, I think.
Yes, he said he needs to start playing better.
So all's going well over there then.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's definitely glad that's not the team that I'm working with, because that does not seem good.
I mean, every league needs the Cleveland Browns, don't they? So I guess.
Yeah.
This one to
well, it's either them or the Wildcats, because then you also had the LA Wildcats head coach Winston Moss fire his defensive coordinator and linebacker coach after week one.
Yeah. There's all the longest serving coach in XFL history puns and jokes after that as well. I think for me, it's not NFL or XFL, but no one is happier that Robert Manfred exists as a commissioner than Roger Goodell. I mean, if anyone can mishandle and be weak in punishment and PR, it's him. I mean, it's just it's every day. I mean, John Boy, who kind of detailed everything when it first broke from Mike Fryers a few months ago now, he's kind of having a field day with Manfred. But is it Cody Bellinger said that this is worse and a bigger deal than steroids, because it's actually like it's affecting people's careers more. I mean, with steroids they still had to hit the thing, but as Mike Trout said, it must be a lot of fun swinging the bat when you know exactly what's coming,
or even not swinging, you know. Yeah. Our baseball insider here pointed out to me that you know what pitches not to swing at, and that helps you as well. It's a huge advantage.
Adam.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not a big baseball fan, but it's an impossible story to miss. They're going to need like a 90 for 90 documentary instead of a 30 for 30 to cover this. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I don't even know how to process it, because, as I say, it's not really my sport. Although another bin that I did have on the baseball side of things, and we were talking about the Mariners, and I kind of putting someone in the bin on Maura's behalf, is, you know, Jerry DePoto, if you're working the Seattle media and the Mariners are the only team you've got to cover for 4 months, it can't be great when the general manager comes out and says, yeah, I'm not really sure we're going to do a hell of a lot this year. This isn't going to be our year.
Yeah, that's I think it's tough for the fans to hear, but I guess you have to give them credit for the fact that, I don't know, you probably appreciate it more as a fan that they're not trying to get your hopes up and say, all right, this is it, we did our rebuild, and nothing's going to happen. They said the player development is more important to them this year, but I know it's painful for the fans.
What have they done with like tickets and concession prices? Because surely the way to mitigate that would be just to keep everything as cheap as possible, just to get people through the doors and get people engaged again. Is there anything suggested to be done with that?
Yeah, their marketing team does a really good job. I think they do have some deals going on. And last year they were doing something where you could buy like a 10-game stretch, a package that was a good deal. And I think it came with some food and drink options. So there, I do think for the fact that fans here do get frustrated, that they have one of the better marketing teams that I've seen, and they do some fun events, you know, Bark in the Park, where you can bring your dog and you can go down on the field after and run around the bases. And yeah, they do a lot of fun stuff.
But despite the on-field, on the diamond product, I guess it is, that is a pretty impressive and pretty breathtaking place to watch sport. And it's a pretty impressive building at Safeco, T-Mobile, whatever it's called now.
T-Mobile, yeah, it's gorgeous. And I've been there on many a summer night where the sunset's just almost like purple. And it's, you know, perfect because we wait months and months here for it to stop raining and the sun to come out. So people get pretty excited just to be outdoors at the ballpark when it's nice that time of year.
Yeah, I was there for the Who in October, 7 rows from the back, and it was quite cold, but yeah, it was still it's a very impressive building to be inside. Adam?
So if we can give you a Seahawks Super Bowl win, a Mariners World Series win, or a Dragons, excuse me, I don't know what the trophy's called, win, which would you go for this year?
I kind of want to go Dragons because
do it.
I would get to be involved in it. I would get to be on the sidelines of it. So I think I'm going to go with that.
I'd be demanding a ring.
It would definitely be Dragons or Seahawks. Yeah.
Yeah. What is their final?
You know, that is a good question. I thought maybe it was just championship. I know I should know these things, right? I think it just says XFL championship game. I'm not sure I just looked it up.
They've got to call the trophy.
Tickets are going to start going on sale in March.
I mean, they have all sorts of names for title. It is the championship because in WWE, the wrestlers aren't allowed to call it a title. It has to be a championship.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's some pointless trivia for you, Adam.
The trophy has to be called the Vince.
Vince.
It has to be.
Yeah, there you go. Instead of the Lombardi, you get the Vince for McMahon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's classic. That. You know, they should get me involved. Tell Oliver Luck I'm free for any consultancy okay. work that they need for, you know, any marketing or information or catering, obviously.
Catering, too. That's nice.
That's the only thing I'm vaguely good at. So, yes, catering. Thankfully, you will pay me to do it.
There is one more thing which has happened, Adam, since last time, probably before we wrap up quickly. The unbelievably sad, tragic, just horrible, one of those moments where you remember where you were and how cold it sent you, the death of Kobe Bryant. Obviously, this isn't an NBA podcast, but we covered all the other American sports, but he's someone, I think I messaged my mate who followed NBA. He's like, Kobe Bryant and Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock, they were the first three people who kind of opened up the American sport entertainment kind of everything for me. And it means the fact that I think Shaquille O'Neal said that all the NBA legends are still around, they're still old, and here's Kobe Bryant, who is in his early 40s and no longer here and no longer to see himself enshrined in Hall of Fame. It was an awful thing that happened, and it's an awful loss of life, not just for Kobe, obviously, but all the other eight people on that helicopter. And his daughter was involved as well. It was horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a proper kind of where were you when you found out the news situation, and not really too much more you can add to that. I think you've covered it pretty well, and obviously send your condolences to everyone. Basketball's not my main sport, but everyone knows who that is and has seen bits of him. I saw him play for America and the Olympics in London in 2012, actually. So that's kind of my brief Kobe Bryant story, but presumably more, you've got an awful lot more that you could reflect on that than we would from over here.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was just struck by how many players we heard from all different sports, between, you know, me talking to some of the XFL guys to, we interviewed a Mariners prospect, Justin Dunn, the other day. You know, he's a pitcher. And, you know, we've got, you know, Michael Bumpus on one of our shows that used to be a Seahawks wide receiver, all just saying that they basically built their mindset playing sports around how they felt Kobe was and how he attacked training and how he attacked games. And it's you really just see that impact, and you see all kinds of athletes on Twitter and everything, but just to see how much of an impact he had on guys that played completely different sports, just wanting to take that same kind of approach and intensity that he had and apply it to their game. And then, you know, just obviously, like you said, the fact that it was just, he's so young and his daughter was in that plane and others, It's just a huge tragedy on top of that. But seeing the outpouring of what he meant to people was really impactful. And then, you know, having it happen right before, you know, during the Pro Bowl and right before the Super Bowl, there was some cool moments with people honoring him.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing ever been more assured than the fact that the Lakers are going to win the NBA title this year. Adam, anything else?
Well, to brighten the mood a little bit, we have not spoken about one other thing that happened since we last podcasted, which was tremendously funny, and that was the San Francisco 49ers being 10 points up in the Super Bowl with 5 minutes to go and losing by 11. And that was a great, great story that happened. And long may that remain in all of our memories, because it was hilarious.
Sorry, I was going to say, yeah, we were all kind of laughing here because Richard Sherman was just shockingly quiet after the Super Bowl. He doesn't have quite as much to say when it doesn't go his way.
I mean, he is the absolute king, Adam, but yeah.
We love him, but I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
It's been funny just to have him a little bit quiet and down, and the Bosas and the Kittles of this world just not quite strutting around quite as dramatically. And Bosa's tears, I felt them from over here, and they were delicious tears. Delicious tears.
But on the Super Bowl, was I alone in thinking that the running back should have won MVP?
No. We had a discussion about that on our show too. I think most people thought that, but you know, I think Patrick Mahomes, the legend of Patrick Mahomes, has grown so much already that, and you know, they tend to just give it to the quarterback even. There's been past years where that's happened. So I think especially because it was Patrick Mahomes, that's just what they did. But I think a lot of people were with you on thinking Damian Williams should have gotten that.
Yeah, because he iced the game, and on Mahomes, I was calling him the GOAT 3 years ago, Adam, wasn't I? So
you were out of college. I think there hasn't been a running back win the NFL Super Bowl MVP for 22 years, I think, since the Denver Broncos, so it's a long time. But it does make it all the more remarkable that Malcolm Smith won the MVP in the Super Bowl that we won.
Yeah, that is true. I guess it's because back then people didn't want to give Russell credit. They kept saying, you know, he was there because of his defense.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
they were willing to give that MVP to someone else then.
Yeah, I mean, it was 1-11 on that defensive side of the ball, wasn't it? I mean, when you stopped Peyton Manning, it kind of was. I mean,
yeah, give it to
Cam
him.
Could have had it. Percy could have had it, because that was everything that moment.
Number one offense, yeah.
Yeah, that what? Yeah, can we do that again, please?
Yes, done. Well,
Maura, where can people get? Follow you and keep track of all the Dragons shenanigans and obviously the sports brunch as well. Where can people go to people all of that?
Yeah, so my Twitter is at Maura, MAURA _ Dool, DOOL. And then sports brunch is just at sports brunch on Twitter. And then, you know, I'm writing some stuff about the Seattle Dragons for the XFL Seattle as well, so you can just go to their website and read up on the latest.
Well, if the Dragons ever follow the Seahawks way and have a game in London, which would be great fun, then you're obviously all more than welcome over here to party like we did for the Raiders game 2 years ago.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, I felt like I missed out. I know Jessamine and Lydia were over there hanging out with you guys, and I would love to come next time.
Speaking of which, I think we need to wish Jessamine a happy birthday. I think it's her birthday today.
It is. She is off doing rugby. She's been calling some national or doing sidelines for national rugby games. But
okay.
I will tell her there was a birthday shout out.
Absolutely official shout out to our friend Jessamine, and we do best meats and worst meats and best fish and worst fish with her regularly. So next time you're on, you can prep your best and worst meats, because it'd be far too much of a big spot to put you in at this stage and this late hour of the day.
I'll have her prep me.
Please do. Very important. Very important.
So if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can on all the usual means and methods on iTunes, Spotify, and pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, and the Pedestrian Podcast. I think that is everything. I don't know what this.
Yeah, an hour podcast in February. That's not bad going.
This has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks and go Dragons.